A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
You think, is Tim Kirchen ready?
Tim Kirchen is with us now. In fact, on the Irish? Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. I don't think he is.
And, and then do you think he has a favorite Irish ball player of all time?
That's something we can ask him right now. Tim, I'm sure you're eavesdropping on the conversation right now. Thanks for coming on. Is there a favorite Irish ball player when you look back at your time covering Major League Baseball?
Well, first off, I'm not Irish.
Okay.
I'm about as far from Irish as you can get.
Okay.
If I drink two light beers, I get buzzed. So that has nothing to do with being Irish. But so I stink at that, too. Favorite Irish baseball player? Geez, I have never even considered that. I think I'll have to go with Irish Bob Musial because that's actually his nickname. So that's about the best I can do.
What can you tell us about Walter O'Malley?
Walter O'Malley was a great owner of the Dodgers to the point where when I first started covering baseball, late 70s, early 80s, and we would go to spring training and we would go to Vero Beach. Vero Beach, where the Dodgers trained, the visiting writers would come in and they had lunch prepared for us, including shrimp cocktail. And then after you've written your story and you're driving back to Pompano Beach or Miami, wherever I was going, they would have beer for you if you wanted to, which I didn't partake. But it was Walter O'Malley was a great owner and passed it to Peter O'Malley, and the O'Malleys owned the Dodgers beautifully for a really long time.
And what people don't maybe know about Vero Beach, and they didn't leave all that long ago, that was the land of time forgotten away. But it was charming because it was a team that had won.
You had like a barracks there, the whole deal, right?
Yeah, they lived on campus. It was like they lived in the dorm rooms when the Dodgers were there. And you could routinely walk around Vero Beach and all of a sudden here comes Sandy Koufax standing right next to you. And it was amazing. So I always loved Vero. I'm so sad that it's gone. But this is what's happened in baseball now. We build these monstrous complexes that are so much more efficient. And you got your entire organization there. It works a lot better this way, but I'll always love Vero.
Tim Kirchen with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. Your thoughts on Adam Duvall returning to the Braves?
Yeah, I really like him as a player. He's an everyday outfielder, but on the Braves, he's going to be a fourth outfielder, and that adds to his value even more because there won't be a better fourth outfielder in the game this year than him. And the fact that he can play center field as well as the other corners, the fact he can run a little bit and hit the ball out of the ballpark and is familiar, of course, with the Braves. All of that suggests great signing by the Braves because somebody eventually is going to get hurt on this team. It never happens to the everyday players, but eventually somebody's going to get hurt. And even if Acuna, and it looks like he's fine, he's going to be okay opening day, it's always good to have a backup just in case.
What were your first thoughts when you heard that Chris Sale came over?
I was a little surprised because he's been so injured and so non-productive the last few years, mainly, of course, because of those injuries that I thought, wow, this is a chance that they're taking. But Vaughn Grissom, of course, didn't turn out exactly the way that they had. So I think this is very much worth the risk for the Braves to do this. I know Chris Sale pretty well. He is a wildly competitive guy. He is so itching to be good again, great again. And I think this is his opportunity with improved health. So I don't think there's any doubt this was the right move by the Braves. I was a little questionable at the beginning, but not now, given his health and the way things are going.
I don't know if your answer would have changed in a two-year period, but if 2 years ago, as the Braves started to sign guys to longer-term deals, if I would have said Max Fried is going to be the one who's not, What would you have thought then? And are your thoughts any different now?
Well, I would have thought he would be the first pitcher signed. I am still confused why he's not long-term signed, but I will give the Braves this. Spencer Strider has become such a great pitcher that you can build your rotation around him as opposed to Max Fried. But we've all learned from in recent years, last 20 years, you better have more starting pitching than you think because somebody's going to get hurt. And I still think Max Fried is going to make a lot of money and get signed long-term from someone. I thought it would be by the Braves by now, but now I start to wonder certain times.
And certainly it's the Alex Anthopoulos way, right? Albeit now with a pitcher, you did it with Dansby, you did it with Freddie, and now maybe going to do it with Max Fried. You just keep that line moving.
Yes, and that's the way to go. You know, way before the Indians did this, signed up their young guys long-term. John Hart was a big part of that. And the Braves, no doubt, have the right formula here. We're starting to see it more and more with guys getting signed long-term, having played, you know, 2 months in the big leagues or no months in the big leagues. This is something the Braves have done. It has worked, and others are following.
Is it a good sign that we're not talking about any of last year's rule changes this year already?
Yeah, I think it's great. And I am really, really surprised how well the rule changes went last year, specifically the pitch clock. Didn't see it working as well as it did. And I just covered a couple games from the booth with that of Eduardo Perez, and it never even came up. The pitch clock, we did have one violation, but it was no big deal. And I'm really happy that we're going to start a baseball season without any real concern or controversy about the rule changes, because I think even though they're not perfect, they were ironed out much easier than I thought they would be.
Tim Kirkchin with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. As you peruse, any surprises thus far that you think could sneak up on some people at the start of the season? Talent-wise, maybe?
Well, I wish I was right one year where I could just pick that team like the Rangers or the Diamondbacks and say, watch, they're going to the World Series. But baseball just isn't built that way. That's why it's such a beautiful game, is it's so unpredictable. So I keep looking for these surprise teams somewhere. I got a good look at the Guardians this spring, and their pitching is really good if Shane Bieber comes back to 2 or 3 years ago, which is a big question right now. Stephen Vogt has added a different energy there, even though the manager he replaced, Tito Francona, is irreplaceable. But I don't see a whole lot of surprise teams out there, although I will say the Padres making that move the other day for Dylan Cease, I think has thrown them right back into the middle of the wild card mix. I didn't see that at the beginning of spring training with all the other things they've lost, Soto included, but now they're back in it. This is why baseball just changes from minute to minute, depending on an injury or a signing.
Tim, give me the first number of Juan Soto's contract when it eventually gets done.
I think it's going to start with a 5 because I think now that Otani has obliterated the salary structure, that it's possible Soto's going to get over $400 million and closer to $500 million, but only if he has another year, another great year, one in which he plays 162 like last year, and the Yankees win, and they resign him or somebody else does. I just think given his track record and his age, there's no denying this guy's talent and where he's going, but this is a really important year if it is indeed going to start with a 5.
I'm not really a fan of old school anymore because it almost sounds like you have to defend it. But I will, in this case, say, let's say Bruce Bochy is the most old school guy, Brian Snicker. And again, they're both doing analytic stuff, but I'm talking about personalities. If that's the Z, who's the least like them who's managing in baseball these days? Like, that's just sort of doesn't feel like the guy who's been in the game for 40 years. It's not a knock. It's just a different personality.
Well, that's a really difficult question. Kevin Cash is a great manager, not a good manager, a great manager. And he follows all the rules when it comes to analytics because his organization needs to rely on analytics because they don't have the money. They need to follow all of those rules and find those hidden gems somewhere. And yet, at the same time, Kevin Cash also has such a great feel for his own players. He knows how to get the best out of them. So to me, he's one of those young managers who's not good, but great, and really needs to focus on the analytics because his organization can't win 90 games a year without it.
Bigger picture, wanted to talk about, you remember Camden Yards kind of changing the face of the new ballparks around baseball. It seems like the Battery here is doing the same. The Braves earned $59 million through the Battery in revenue last year, and I would imagine you talking to executives, this is what everybody is going to try to recapture now around baseball.
Absolutely. It is now the model. I mean, nobody loves Camden Yards more than I do, and there is some stuff built up around Camden Yards that is really cool. But you can walk out of Truist Park, and you're in a restaurant, like in 30 seconds. That's what everyone wants to do. That's why the Royals are considering moving to a downtown place where everything could be built up around it. That's why the Cardinals built that entire village around Busch Stadium. So this is the way to go. The Braves, again, pretty far ahead of things in a lot of ways.
Tim, I don't know what you want to say or are willing to say about the Angelos regime being done in Baltimore, but I know how much that team means to you. I certainly know what the social media reaction was to new ownership.
Yeah, the team doesn't mean much to me. I'm not rooting for anybody. All 30 teams are the same to me, and I don't care how corny that sounds. I am rooting for the neighborhoods in Baltimore and the history of the franchise because it is so rich, and I love the way those people support the team. The answer is this is going to be a good thing for the Orioles, maybe a great thing for the Orioles, because they're going to have three players, Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, and Jackson Holliday, who are going to be star players for 10 years, if not 15. And they're all going to need to get paid at a similar time. And new ownership is going to be in a far, far greater position to do something like what the Braves did with their best young players, get them locked up. So if I'm an Orioles fan, I would think, great, this is our best shot to make sure that Jackson Holliday doesn't get away and he and Gunnar Henderson play right next to each other for 10 years and the catcher stays. But that, to me, is what the new ownership could do that the old ownership could not.
Could I give you a couple of older manager names and just tell me, like Tommy Lasorda, what's the first thing you think of?
His wife once told him, you love me more than you love baseball. And he said, but I love you more than basketball and football. So Tommy is, all kidding aside, is one of the best managers in the history of baseball, a clear Hall of Famer, and a guy whose energy level just showed up every day. And as corny as it sounds, the whole I love Dodger blue was 100% true with him.
The old clips of him are fascinating. We celebrated what would have been his birthday the other day and played the World Series clip when he's going at it with Doug Rowell. I don't know how many other managers could get away with talking to a guy like that nowadays, especially.
Right. Well, that would never happen nowadays. Now we go out and pat a guy on the butt and tell him what a great job he did after he gave up 10 runs. I mean, this is what we do because this is how the game is played now. And part of me certainly understands that. But the Doug Rowles of the world were used to getting yelled at because everyone back then, when you made a mistake or gave up a bunch of hits or challenged the manager on the mound, why are you taking me out of the game? That's what they were taught to do back then. And the manager had all, you know, the power to say and do whatever he wanted. Those days are over. The value of the manager just isn't what it used to be, which, getting back to Bruce Bochy, one reason that the Rangers won the World Series last year is Chris Young, the GM, told Bruce Bochy, you're the manager of the team. You cover the game for us. You do everything, and that's what he did. It's not a coincidence that they won when they put the value of the team back into the hands of the manager.
Is it kind of similar here? I mean, Alex runs things as far as personnel, but he lets Snip manage, it seems.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I'm, again, 67 years old. I'm an old man, and I just grew up watching and following and covering Earl Weaver's teams. And what Earl said went. There were only two people making a decision there, the GM and the manager. And Hank Peters, the GM, would tell Hank, I mean, would tell Earl once in a while, no, we're not going to do that. But for the most part, Earl made the calls. Now, it was in 80 when I covered them briefly in 81 and then 86. But I think you need to leave it in the hands of the manager and get out of his way once the game begins so we can start watching the games again instead of watching our spreadsheets and our computers and our TVs. We should be watching the game.
How much interaction did you have with Billy Martin over the years?
I never covered his team, and it's never the same unless you were the beat guy for the team. So all those guys that I covered as a beat guy, Don Zimmer, you know, Doug Rader, Bobby Valentine, Earl Weaver, Cal Ripken Sr., Frank Robinson, those are the guys you know. You really never, ever get to truly know a manager, in my opinion, until you're the beat guy. So I didn't know Billy well. I interacted with him many, many times. But to say I was close with him and we had a really good relationship and I saw him all the time, no, that wasn't true. He was mostly the manager of the Yankees, and he had his hands full with the 12 beat writers on that team.
What about you mentioned Bobby Valentine. What did you think when he first got into managing and how it played out?
I knew right away that he was smarter than – virtually everyone else on the field. Bobby was a really good player until he got hurt. Bobby had a different look at things. Bobby was smarter than everyone else. And I thought Bobby Valentine would end up as a Hall of Fame manager, and I was wrong, mostly because the teams he managed just weren't good enough. But he did some amazing things in Japan. He turned the Rangers around. He got the Mets to the World Series. And I still say that one year in Boston just wasn't fair to him. He was never given the opportunity to succeed. And I still feel badly for him that that's the way his major league managing career ended.
I know you could do a deep dive into all of the numbers and all the analytics and the pluses and the minuses that people throw at the end of these three-letter terms. But are you more of, if I see it, I know it, like in how you feel about a player? Have you ever deep dived into stats to try to confirm what it is you thought about a player, how good he was or not?
Yeah, I voted for the Hall of Fame for, 35 years. So I'm deep diving into the stats all the time. But, I'm only using a few stats where I'm going to say, all right, this is the determinant factor here. It's usually OPS, which to me is still the best gauge of whether what a player can do. But in the end, what I'm going to do is trust my own eyes, and then I'm going to check with everyone else whose eyes see things that I can't see. Like I'm going to go ask the manager of the team or the general manager of the team or the hitting coach, like, what am I seeing here? Am I seeing the right thing? Because I'm going to trust Jim Leland's eyes before I'm going to trust anything that I read on a stat sheet or anything else. It's not to say that's not right. I do them both, but I don't do anything unless I go ask somebody who actually played the game, tell me about this, because this is what I see. Am I right or am I wrong?
Finishing up with Tim Kirkshen, I keep coming back to the Braves because we talked to Mark DeRosa about that very thing. He said when he played for Alex back in his days in Toronto, Alex would go into the clubhouse and talk to everybody, ask everybody what their opinion of things were. And I think that trend continues here, aside from that game one lineup against Philadelphia last year. But the culture here is different. From the outside looking in, we keep hearing the word culture. What is the culture of the Braves when you talk to people around baseball?
Well, it's a great culture because ownership has made sure that the team has what it needs. Brian Snitker is an old school manager who understands leaving the players alone and letting them play and trusting them is the most important thing. And Alex has done a fabulous job as the general manager. But just to show you how different things are, Hall of Fame general manager Pat Gillick never went into the clubhouse, or rarely. And he never asked anybody anything because he felt like the clubhouse was the players' domain. So for Alex to do it a different way, is great. I love it. And he belongs in there, and he can do whatever he wants. He's running that team. But everyone does it a different way. But the culture with the Braves is really, really good. And it's because they win a lot of games, but they do things the right way.
Hey, Tim, what was the Tim Kirchen fallback plan if this didn't work?
Well, there was no fallback plan. I can't do anything else. I'm not trained to do anything else. I stink at everything else. I mean, if I wasn't a baseball writer, I would have been a basketball writer. If I wasn't a sports writer, I'm not sure what I would have done, because I was a one-trick pony as a kid, and I'm 67 years old, and I'm still the same. I am really incompetent at so many things. Fortunately, I found something that I love, and I've stayed with it for a long time.
Well, maybe you have a year. Maybe next year you put out your all-Irish team, and maybe, I don't know, if you want to go holiday-driven. I'm half-Irish. I'm allowed to say this. I don't even understand what this holiday actually is. But perhaps there's something there for guys like you who do enjoy the history of the game.
Okay, well, Tim Ireland should be on the team as a utility player for obvious reasons.
And then there's Eric O'Flaherty. Just give it some thought. Yeah. We're trying to get the ball rolling for you. Tim Kirchen, always a pleasure having you on. We'll talk soon.
Okay, talk to you later.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.